welcome to the Marriage Review. What a delight it is to be joined today by my friend Maddie Lubchansky, who is a cartoonist and illustrator and the associate editor of Ignatz, award-winning magazine and website. They live in beautiful Queens, New York with their spouse, and their new graphic novel is called Boys Weekend. Maddie, I think my only... I wanted to add to your author bio that both you and your spouse are incredibly gifted at karaoke.
Thank you so much. No, that's really lovely to hear. Because that's my real passion, you know.
I figured. So I was trying to figure out how to get into this conversation. And I feel like your style of cartooning is so apparent to me that I can recognize your kind of signature look from anywhere. And rather than me trying to explain to you what makes your style so distinctive, I was wondering if you could tell me what you think your kind of signature look is.
Okay. That's tough because, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of artists out there that are very, very talented draftspeople and can kind of draw however, and they spend years kind of honing a style that's like a personal style, or they have like a couple of styles that they draw in depending on what they're working on. But I'm self-taught. I draw the one way. I'm doing the best I can when you look at my art. So I guess, I think the people are pretty simple. They're not like overly complicated. I try to save fussy bits for when they are necessary only, because I recognize how long people generally are looking at comic panels, which is not very long. I try to convey a lot of motion best I can. The eyes are really huge in a way that I cannot help. And the heads are a smidge too big, a thing I've never been able to fix. So this is, I'm sure, like a great endorsement of my work is my description here. But
But the eyes are, I think, particularly apparent in Boys Weekend that they make for, you know, it's like a good actor. You can look into the eyes and that's where Smize comes from.
I think it's apparent to, if you are a reader of cartoons or a watcher of animation, I think it is very obvious to a reader that I watched a lot of The Simpsons and read a lot of The Far Side growing up and when I was teaching myself how to draw. So I sort of like smashed those two things into each other at full speed in like the Hadron Collider of my brain. And I think that's what it kind of looks like.
I love that. And of course, I've become used to seeing in your work on the Nib and on your Instagram a character who may or may not share qualities with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that Boys Weekend features a character who may or may not share qualities with you and a character who may or may not share qualities with your spouse.
Mm. That's
what
fair.
Would you like to say about that?
Yeah, so like I think it's very different because the most of my work up until now has been, I guess you'd have to call it nonfiction. Like we only run nonfiction on the Nib, and it is humor or satire. My personal work that's on my social media and Patreon, whatever, and a website until I stopped using websites because who looks at a website? You know, that character that appears a lot of the time is supposed to be me. Like that is the sort of point of view of the comic. It is often a very exaggerated version of me, or when I want to make fun of myself, or generally if I just need a protagonist for a comic strip and do not feel like designing one, I can draw myself very fast because I'm practiced at it. However, the main character of Boys Weekend, Sammy, is like vaguely based on, so the book, the premise of the book in which like a trans feminine person is asked to be their old friend's best man at a bachelor party and they kind of go to a seasteading Las Vegas is vaguely very, very, very loosely based on something that happened to me where I was at my friend's bachelor party right after I came out. And it was, I need to keep stressing this in every interview I do, is a very different situation. Those friends are still my friends. I was out to them in a way. Dead. Yeah. Like I've not been out for a long time. I was not like presenting much differently. It was a very different situation. We're all different people. It was a long time ago now. So it was like, yeah, they're all alive crucially, but like, you know, I was getting, but like Sammy's a little different than I am. They're a lot less confident. Not like I'm a very confident person, but like I sort of tried to tease out the weakest parts of myself at that time in my life and like kind of like deposit into a person. And yeah, they do look a little bit like the way I draw myself. Crucially, no glasses. And my wife in the comic, crucially, not in real life, but in the book, glasses. So I think it's pretty easy to tell us apart.
My mouth is hanging open. I really hadn't like put that together.
And, I also hadn't until just now. So I'm just realizing this is what I did. but like, you know, I try to do some things that like a little different, but like, yeah, it kind of looks like me.
And so we see a wedding photo from the year 2027.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the date of their wedding, which so we know that this book is taking place in the near future.
Yeah, it's I think you actually see the date on Sammy's plane ticket. I think it's the early 2030s or something was what I was shooting for. Near future. Very near.
And so the world in which this is set, though, feels dystopian, and yet
yes.
It seems like we're getting closer to that every day. So maybe at this time, you can take us inside the world of El Campo and how you conceived of it.
Oh, sure. So I think what was interesting to me about this experience that I had is that I do not like the Las Vegas, Nevada. I do not have a good time when I'm there. The times I've been there, it's just not for me. I understand that there are things about it. There's like a weird part of it where there's weird stuff. There's like a neon museum or whatever. Like I know there's stuff to do there that is fun and weird and strange and gay and all that. However, the main sense that I get when I'm there is sort of existential dread and like terror and like an absolute fear response. I keep likening it to everyone in my life is tired of me saying this, but have you read The Dispossessed?
Yes.
So much of that book is describing, it's one of my very favorite books. So much of that book is someone describing seeing capitalism for the first time. And you, the reader, are supposed to be like, holy moly, this is a totally insane way for us to organize our lives, right? And that's how I feel going to Las Vegas. It's like, I've never actually experienced America. I've never experienced capital and its effects on it. Like, it's just so... And there's something about specifically this sort of everything goes environment, but like it's everything goes with a humongous asterisk, where it's like as long as you are adhering to a certain set of social norms or mores or whatever you want to call them, it's like it's very straight, I mean, it's not necessarily very white or anything, but like there's something about the place there that it's like it's anything goes as long as you are normal, right? With a capital M.
And as long as you spend money.
And as long as you spend an ungodly amount of money. But you can do whatever you want if you want to pony up for the hotel where everything's clowns, you know, like, or everything's like, you know, it's the sort of thing where it feels very, you know, like the last days of Rome there, where it's just like this complete orgy of being overstimulated and all this, like literally shit that looks like the last days of Rome, quite literally. And I was just sort of trying to distill the feeling of that to a person that doesn't experience that or has never been, or, you know, just this sort of like really tease out the sort of things I do not like about this kind of place, of which it is not the only place, of course, into sort of like an absolute nightmare hellscape.
One of the defining features of El Campo, of course, is that it's in international waters.
Yes.
And so tell me about that from first, like a behavioral, like what we're expected to want in that kind of situation point of view, but also from a visual point of view.
Mm.
Tell me about making a world at sea.
So I think the idea of it existing somewhere that is very remote made a lot of sense to me, because there's some stuff in there that is absolutely wacky in terms of things you are able to do there. You know, there's some pretty screwy stuff going on, and the desert is taken already by the extant Las Vegas, you know. And I was sort of, and there also is this strain to the book where the sort of, there is like some sort of cult activity going on the island there. That's sort of like the main thrust of the plot of the book. And I've been long obsessed, and the cult is sort of like libertarian tech guys. And I've been very, very long obsessed with libertarianism for some reason. Like, as a, I'm just fascinated by a political movement that's whole thrust is like, we don't owe anything to each other, actually. Your life should be worse. And I've long been, I've long joked about making like an unofficial sequel to Atlas Shrugged, where they actually, all the libertarians go to somewhere where there's no poor people anymore. And like, who has to operate the oven at the restaurant, right? If it's all billionaires and it's the guy who's the least rich, and then he, you know, whatever. But so, because of that, they're very obsessed, or they less so now, but there was a very long stretch where they're very obsessed with seasteading as a concept. And it's just sort of like working my long obsession with this idea that you can sort of escape society and put it somewhere new is interesting to me, and sort of what I was thinking about. And yeah, I think it was just sort of, it feels so much more hopeless and inescapable if you are literally in the middle of the ocean and you probably don't have enough money to change your flight home, right? So if like everything's bad and you need to get away, what do you do? Where do you go? You are quite literally surrounded by the Atlantic Ocean.
And then, so there, you know, there, you have to take catamarans everywhere. You have to, there are no, yeah. There are no taxis, obviously.
Yeah. Well, there's water tax. I mean, the sheer amount of different types of taxi in this book, I think I got three in there, three or four. There's lots of flying vehicles. There's like a boat taxi. There's like a big boat. I also the idea of like a place where all these tech guys can just sort of like put whatever crazy thing that straight up doesn't work on the market with no problems. Like they keep saying like, oh, flying cars are going to be here any minute. And what it's going to be is it's going to be a helicopter that crashes that's owned by Elon Musk, right? Like it's going to be a mass murder event when they get this out there, right? So a place where all these like wacky vehicles that have a high failure rate are in the air everywhere.
And even in the midst of the action in the book, we get to see some of the ads that perhaps Sammy is seeing in El Campo. And tell me a little bit about them. Seems like you had fun.
Oh, I had a blast. I mean, that's very, again, another, not to keep bringing up like The Simpsons, but sort of like legendary background gags in that show. Mm-hmm. That always fascinated me. Futurama also very good at this. And it's just a really good way to sort of immerse yourself in the world, is to just, I think advertisements are a really quick way to sort of set a scene in terms of like what society is like, if you're going to put somebody in the future or the past or whatever. And also it was just a very fun opportunity to like, you know, there's not like a lot of like funny stuff happening in the book, but I'm so used to making funny comics that I need to like just excise that somewhere. So there's, you know, an ad for a service where you can engrave the moon in the background, you know, like it just seemed like it was a nice way to fill the background in both a visual and also a metaphysical sense.
Yes.
It sounds so much more pompous than like, I thought of a stupid joke and I wanted
I thought it sounded so lovely that I didn't even want to comment afterwards. But I do want to say the eat the pepper that kills you ad
I forgot. that is legitimately good. I was like, yeah, you need what would I was trying to imagine every type of guy in the world. All right. And they go to this place, and what do they want when they get there? And it's like the guy that like goes to the hot sauce store and buys all the hot sauces, what does he want? Because that's the death drive. And I wanna accommodate him. Yeah.
100%. And so you were very good at, you don't spend that many pages on it, but you are very good at establishing that Sammy is happy at home, has a good support system, has a, you know, I can't speak to the entire or the whole thing, but Sammy has like a pretty lovely life.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Oh, I mean,
no, you keep going.
Okay. I was just going to say, like, I think what was interesting to me about that was sort of like, this is not a situation they have to be in. Mm-hmm. It was so important to me in terms of like how things were working, that this is like very much self-inflicted and something that, you know, there's a lot of stories out there about what, you know, there's obviously in terms of like trans narratives that we're seeing, the ones that we are allowed to see. And I'm very lucky that I'm in a position where I'm allowed to tell one on a scale like this or on a platform that I have. And I think a lot of them are about either personal growth, it's all like coming out stuff, or it's all romantic stuff. But I think there's all these other sticky parts of your life that you sort of have to disentangle the threads of. And I think like there's very little talk about, and like in almost every, not even just trans stuff, but like books and movies in general about just like friendship and like what is required to maintain a friendship. What is, you know, so I think it was for me important to show that like, this is a person that is capable of having actual relationships and friendships that are like satisfying. And just them sort of coming to terms with this one that is no longer that.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, anyone who's kind of outgrown a friend group can surely relate. One of the things that I love about the introduction of this group is that there really is no mention of who Adam, the bachelor, is going to marry. Because that is a superfluous detail in these characters' lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. Like, there's one little moment of tenderness at the beginning where, like, it comes to, I mean, it sort of comes to the reader's attention that, like, Adam actually does like his wife or his fiance in a way that, like, these other guys are just sort of like, ah, my bitch wife, right? Which is, like, it feels very cliche to be like, ah, these guys are talking about my bitch wife. But, like, until 10 years ago, or until an amount of time ago, was in these like all male spaces, right? And it is crazy the way that these men talk about their spouses. It's crazy. It's nuts. So anyways, so, you know, it comes to the reader's attention that like, yeah, this guy actually does like his fiance. It's not like he's checking off a box or whatever, but like nobody else there cares. It's not like the, I mean, it's also, I think, my deep weirdness about like bachelor and bachelorette parties as a going concern. Like, I don't quite understand it. And I think, I mean, that's very well-worn territory that like, oh, a queer person doesn't understand bachelor party more and who's at 11. But like, it just sort of like, to me, that was the sort of nature of the institution, right? Is like, these are just, it's just an excuse for these guys that who all hate their lives to go somewhere where there's no rules and do whatever the hell they want until they have to go back on work on Monday, where they have to just sit around texting again about the next time they go get to have fun for 3 days.
And some of the conversations that Sammy doesn't quite want to get involved in do all of the cliched bro stuff, but in a way that feels particularly capitalist.
Mm.
Tell me about some of the interstitial conversations.
I think anyone who is either has a job where like a job where it doesn't pay a lot, or they have a creative career or whatever, and you start talking to an old college friend or a family member or something, and they want to start talking to you about investments that they have, or you know, like just anything really expensive, it just starts to sound kind of crazy making. Like, do you live on another planet? You know, and I say this as a person with like a decent amount of privilege, but like still I'll go, you know, I'll talk to somebody that I know from a long time ago, and just like the sort of purchases they'll be making, you know, will just be baffling to me. So like the idea that like paying attention to the stock market because of my investments, or like trying to stay up on the hot new thing. There's a lot of references to crypto in this book because I wrote it 2.5 years ago, but you know, and it takes a long time to print, but you know, there's, I think it's just sort of, it's very alienating to listen to that. And I think it's all very tied up with masculinity in this way. A lot of it, I think, this sort of like trying to be a master of the universe or whatever, but now because it's like taboo to be, like a huge asshole to everyone, you know, but it's like trying to be a master of the universe in like a cool way, you know, but it's still like, it is still this, you're still chasing this thing that is fundamentally, I think, incompatible with like human life, you know?
I mean, Sammy gets to a point where they say like, doesn't this sound like a pyramid scheme?
Yeah.
After one of these conversations, and I feel like the more we're, I mean, it's so funny that you wrote this 2.5 years ago, because crypto really delivered.
Well, we're all, yeah, I mean, we're all banking with crypto now. we're doing microtransactions to work on this call right now. Every couple of seconds is another 0.1 Ethereum, just to keep our call going, as we all know. Yeah, we all love crypto. We're all using it all the time. It did not crater. The thing after it didn't already crater. Legs are here. We're all using Meta. We're all hanging out in the metaverse with our legs.
We love our legs.
We love, listen, I love to have legs here in the metaverse. I don't know about you. The thing we're using. And then, like, you know, AI is already, I mean, it's not, hasn't crashed yet, but like, if I made the book about AI, it would be done by the time it came out. Like, there's no way to predict what the next scam is going to be. So I threw like a bunch of buzzwords together, but one of the words in there is crypto. And it's like, that one I shouldn't use, but.
No, it's perfect.
Every time crypto crashed, I'd be sitting there at home like,
gotta wait a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And there's also that idea in the tech world specifically that not only are you a master of the universe, but you're like, you are doing something good for the rest of the world by having a tech company of some sort. And I feel like that really comes through in the gray hand vests that we keep seeing around El Campo.
Yeah, like the idea of progress for personal gain or whatever. Like, what is, you know, there's all this like dazzling technology stuff on the island itself. And it's like, for what? For surveillance, for certain people to profit, for violence and misery, for, you know, like all sorts of sick shit. And like, I think it's important to sort of, you know, people, you can call it like Luddism all you want, which again, go look up what a Luddite actually did or was. But, you know, the idea of like thinking about when we have new things, who are they for? Who's making them and why? And like, is it even necessary? Should we be focusing on something else perhaps? You know, I think the book doesn't get like too much into that in like a deep way, but it's certainly, the fingerprints are all over it, right? Because it's something I think about all the time.
Yeah. And so in the middle of all of this grandstanding, there is Sammy hoping to have just a back and forth regular conversation.
Yeah.
We are also introduced to Sammy's elder queer mentors who do weigh in on the entire situation. Tell me about the inclusion of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, because it was actually the original. That was something that came to me late when I was like writing the script for it, was the inclusion of these friends, Betty and Cal, that are sort of like, it's one of those things where it's not explicitly said, but they are like, they are elders in the sense that they've like been out longer, but I don't think they're that much older, you know? it's that thing where I have queer elders that are younger than me, because of how this time works. But like the idea of like originally was just like the very solid foundation of Sam's life was just their spouse, but it's kind of like, well, that's not enough. That's not a whole life, right? Like, I wanted to show there's more to it. And the continual sort of like checking in, asking for advice of these people is sort of like, I wanted to show that there was something Sammy was like fighting for, or at least like had some handle on they know this is bad and they shouldn't be here, and to sort of, you know, when you're like reading an advice column and you could tell the letter writer is just like, tell me I'm good, or tell me to stop, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think having that was good for a lot of character reasons. And so I think the sort of like continual checking in for like an outside perspective. So the reader's not going completely insane, like yelling at the book also, you know?
I mean, and of course, Mia just, of course, says the thing that there would be no plot if Sammy had just done that thing, which is, you know, just talk to Adam,
yeah,
and kind of explain what's up.
Yeah. And, you know, it's that thing where it's not, I think it's something that is changing, and it's very dependent on the group of friends you're in. But I think it is not too broad of a generalization to say that like men tend to not talk to each other about very serious subjects a lot of the time. Like the conversations I would have with like guy friends pre-transition and the conversations I have with like girlfriends now are crazy. The difference, right? Crazy. And it was always this thing where it was very unfulfilling to me to have those kind of friendships. And I was also, you know, I'm lucky enough that like the guy friends that I still have are friends that I'm able to like have actual conversations with, and it's not awkward or impossible or whatever. But, you know, there's definitely those kinds of friends that a lot of guys have where it's like, well, we both like watching the same sports, or we both like, which is not to say that like women don't have shallow friendships with people, but I think there is this bigger barrier to having a serious conversation with a good friend if it's, you know, a guy. Not to sound too essentialist about it, but like this is a sort of,
would
like,
you say
broad...
that men are from Mars?
I would say that men are from the planet we know as Mars, the red planet. Mm-hmm, uh-huh. And the women, they're from a little place I like to call Venus. I, mm-hmm. You know, but like, there's a reason that society like comes up with these things, right? Like, it's not totally inaccurate. It is a generalization. Of course, I can hedge all fucking day, but I mean it. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah.
So what was I getting at here? You know, I think that it's sort of like, it is this thing where, but it is also, I think, like I said before, a huge failing on the part of Sammy, the main character, that's like, you're not, you could just talk, like, okay, the other person's stonewalling you about a conversation. You could just have the conversation. But a lot of the book is Sammy sort of unbecoming a coward.
And it's one of the other big threads of the book, of course, that we've alluded to but haven't talked about explicitly, you and I right now, is the constant misgendering that happens, because that is the nature of the entire fucking weekend.
Yeah. I try to get at this in the books. You know, there's no, this is the sort of thing where it's like conversations that trans people have with each other about this stuff, and trans people, the conversations we have with cis people about this stuff, are very different. I don't get too much into like the weeds here, but like there, you know, the thing is about pronouns and misgendering and all that stuff is that it is, one, not the end of the world important, two, very important, right? Like, it is like the thing that is important is like liberation, bodily autonomy, full stop. Like, everything else is, you can call me a man all you want, as long as the hormones keep flowing, it's fine. Like, that's the first priority is bodily autonomy forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. But like, the pronoun stuff, the misgendering, whatever, is like, that's from your community and your family and your colleagues and your friends, first of all. And then like interactions you have with doctors or the state or whatever. This is all very important stuff. It sucks to get misgendered all the time. The reason you transition is to like, the whole point of transitioning externally and so anyway is to like, you know, so people gender you differently. But, you know, I think it's, but if I think it fundamentally, what I get at in the book, or I tried to anyways, is when someone is misgendering you, fundamentally, someone you know, it is not, it is because they are thinking to themselves, I'm going to do so-and-so a favor by thinking of them why I always think of them. And then I'm going to switch my brain to the other word that they asked me to do, because I'm doing them a big old favor because I'm so cool and great. And then I'm going to say the right word, and I'm going to give myself a little pat on the back. And it's kind of like, well, okay, I obviously have more trans friends than the average cis person. It's a trans person. It's just how it works. But basically, it is not hard. You don't have to do any translating if you just fundamentally alter. You just believe the person when they say it to you, and then you've got it in your brain, and you don't do it anymore. It's like not complicated. And I think it does illustrate a fundamental disrespect you have for a person, or at least sort of some disconnect in whether or not you feel ownership over their identity. It's all downstream of this other thing that I think is, again, more important, right? So yeah, pronouns, not the end of the world. And also the end of the world is basically where I'm feeling about it, you know?
And yeah, I mean, you can, I hadn't really considered how gendered the neutral, like, bro or man or,
yeah,
like, all of those things that are just constants in conversations.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, the worst, especially if you're paying for a fancy trip, you'll get some gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that stuff sucks. I mean, I will say, as a proud New Yorker and longtime New York City metro area resident my entire life, you guys is gender neutral. That's fine.
Good. That's actually,
we don't have y'all up here. If you say y'all and you're from up here, you should stop doing that immediately. And you guys is fine, unless you're with someone who thinks it's not, but it's fine to me.
I don't want to give too much of the ending away,
mm-hmm.
but tell me a little bit about the horror in the book that Sammy for sure is seeing, and whether we are to believe that it is actually happening or not.
Oh, huh. I never, that's interesting. I never thought about it in a, is it actually happening sort of way?
Hmm.
No, I'm saying that's an interesting, I think there's a lot of like the, I'm thinking now, you know, I think it's sort of like there's, Sammy's taking a long time to believe that it's happening because they're feeling so crazy about what's going on. But it was, you know, to me, it was always like fundamentally a science fiction story. So it was never sort of like the, is it real? Is it not? But that's a very interesting reading of it in terms of like, could this be a character internalizing some external circumstances into feeling crazy? And that's just at the end, them just losing it. That's an interesting read of the book. And I don't, you know, fundamentally I'm dead, right? Like you can, that's a great, if you like that, that's great. But it's actually something I wasn't intentionally sort of stoking. And that is, I think, the beauty of the author-reader relationship. I'm serious. Wow. Like, that's very cool, actually. I like that. That's where you're at.
Well, what a perfect way to end then. But before we go, Maddie, please share some books you'd like to recommend with us.
Oh, sure. I was very nervous about this, so I wrote it down. Okay. So I was going to mention The Dispossessed in terms of like an old book that I was thinking about a lot when I made this book. Dispossessed, Ursula Le Guin, one of my favorite authors, one of my very favorite books. Okay. A new thing to me that I read very recently, that is an older book. I just read Embassy Town by Chana Mieville, which I love a whole lot. And it's a very interesting thing. It's making me think about language a lot and making me think about society. I love Chana Mieville a bunch, and that book is great. Let's see. Oh, I wanted to throw a comic in there. One I read recently was, I'm going to mispronounce this, but is a Shubake Lubake by Dina Muhammad. Came out a couple months ago, also from Pantheon. She is an Egyptian comic artist, and it's this great sort of anthology about like, what if genies were real and they were commodified? It's very cool. And it's like a bunch of short stories kind of set in this universe that are overlapping. It was really great. I really enjoyed it. And I'm currently reading Palo Alto by Malcolm Harris, which is just a nice book by a nice boy that's making me so mad. So mad every day reading Palo Alto.
800 pages of just being mad.
Just I'm like hopping furious. But it's written so like, what I love about Malcolm's writing is that it's like written in a way that it's like a lot of theory stuff, but it's written in a way that a normal human being or an illiterate bitch like myself can completely understand it. A simple cartoonist can understand Marx.
I love that. Well, Maddie, Boys Weekend is out now. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was wonderful.
Thank you for listening to the Maris Review, and check the show notes for the books we discussed on here today. And please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.